Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Well, 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 welcome back to another episode, the last week of April going into May as we approach turkey season. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode, and what better way to kick it off than with another turkey hunting episode. But first and foremost, before we get into our turkey hunting episode, I have something that I want to share with you guys. So if you have not heard on previous episodes, and if I would be able to share with you, I was able to share camp last fall in bear season with a guy by the name of Evan Geiswhite. And it was the first time I ever met Evan, and I only got to spend one weekend hunting with him. But what I will tell you is Evan was a wonderful, wonderful human being. I mean, he was a blast to be with. He was fun to talk to. He was a great group person. He fit right in. He was full of just joy. And I was looking forward to more, you know, opportunity to hunt with him and sharing camp with him, as he was just a great guy. And unfortunately, in the beginning of this month, Evan and his wife were driving on the highway to go to a church event, believe it or not. And unfortunately, Evan lost his life in a car accident. Evan was in his late 20s. He leaves behind his wife, his three-year-old son, and his wife was 20 weeks pregnant, and unfortunately, they had to have an emergency surgery, and they lost their 20-week-old baby. So there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of unknown, and I'm sharing some heavy stuff with you guys, and it's all because I'd like to figure out a way to give back as best I can in a case like this. And I'm sharing this all with you because, first of all, life is too short. It's a privilege to live, and the time that we have is an absolute privilege, and enjoy it while it's here, because as the breath of life is given, it can also be taken away. And I also feel for, I can't imagine being in his wife's shoes right now, as she goes forward as a mother who lost her husband. There's a lot of unknowns, right? She was a stay-at-home mom, and this just flipped her world and their family's life upside down. So I'm asking all of you listeners who feel so compelled to do so to visit Evan's GoFundMe page. It is In Memory of Evan Geiswhite, and that's spelled Geiswhite. And if you feel encouraged to help Amanda, help Evan's family in any way, shape, or form, you can do there. And you can also send any donation you wish directly to Big Woods Bible Church. Under the Giving tab, you can select and write the description Geiswhite, and doing that, you can avoid the 2.9% fee of donations through GoFundMe. So I'm going to continue to share this and spread the word. It's heavy, it's difficult, but I just feel necessary, because it's painful. So, back to this week's episode. As we go in light of turkey season, I figured what better way to get started than talking with one of my favorite turkeys himself. And that's Mr. Paul Campbell. Now, for those of you who don't know who Paul is, Paul has his hands in an array of podcasting content type stuff. Paul was once one of the co-hosts of the O2 Ohio's Outdoors podcast. He also hosts a podcast called The Turkey Season, and Paul works for the National Wild Turkey Federation. He is ate up with turkeys the way I am ate up with whitetails, and we're going to have a fun, engaging conversation to kick the season off, and we're going to discuss a bunch of things. We're going to discuss the importance of patience. We're going to talk about understanding turkey behavior, the effectiveness of different hunting strategies from the roost to mid-morning hunts. We'll talk a little bit about calling techniques, and Paul's going to share with us some knowledge that he has learned from some pretty legendary turkey hunters and turkey conservationists. You know, Paul's had the opportunity to interview tons and tons of big names in the hunting world focusing on the wild turkey. And I think that that dialogue that he brings forth and that background he brings into the conversation is a little bit different than you get to hear. So we're going to talk about some little nuances in turkey hunting that revolve around those things. And as always, it's great to have a friend like Paul on the show. Let's dive into this week's episode. But first, before we do, we're going to go to commercial break. We're thankful for these partners, and we're going to continue to support them as they support us. And that first one is Radix Hunting. Guys, Radix, as I've been saying, is the king of blinds, in my opinion. Any of the Monarch series blinds is built with quality in mind. Whether you're hunting on public land and need a quick pop-up blind to conceal your movements and keep you out of the elements, or if you're hunting private land and you want to upgrade to a large box blind, the quality is unmatched. Also check out M-Core trail cameras, Gen 700 trail cameras, and any of the stick and pick camera accessories. Check out any of the hunting gear that Radix has to offer. It's quality made, and it also has your pocket in mind. Also, Huntworth. Going on right now, check out Huntworth.com, HuntworthGear.com, and you can check out all of the gear that I love to use during turkey season. A lot of their lightweight gears, such as the Durham pants. Durham pants have been one of my favorite things to use during turkey season. Also, the Sheldon hoodie has a built-in face mask. You can check out any of their camo patterns from the Digital Disruption, which I like to use, and the original Tarnin. The new camouflage pattern, which I have to admit is pretty darn sick, is Vertec. And check out any of the gear they have to offer. But you can go in there and build a Huntworth system. Shop by season, choose the temperatures and the climate that you're going to be hunting in, and you'll be vividly amazed at how comfortable it is. And lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. Guys, Little Mountain Outfitters is one of my favorite shops, and it is located in Richland, Pennsylvania. This is a custom archery shop and hunting shop for you to check out. And if you are hearing this, but you can't get to Richland, Pennsylvania yourself, check out their website, littlemountainoutfitters.com. And anything that they have available, shopping products from bows down to electronic transport and trapping and hunting, habitat management, any of the things that they have in their store, you can buy online. And if you choose to do so, you can save 10% off if you use the code WOODSMAN10. Again, if you go on to littlemountainoutfitters.com and you use the code WOODSMAN10, you can save 10% off on your next purchase from Little Mountain Outfitters. Check them out, and if you're in the area, swing by in the shop as well. All right, let's get rolling with this episode with Mr. Paul Campbell. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. Hey, joining us on this week's show is what I like to call my favorite turkey, Mr. Paul Campbell. Mr. Paul Campbell, thank you for coming back on the show again.
Oh, Mitch, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
So for those of you who can't see because of the video here, I'm watching Mr. Paul. He's sitting in his car, and he is decked out in full camouflage. You know, I've noticed a resurgence of some of the older camouflages. I've seen, you know, the hunting public's got their older style short bill hats with the old camouflage, and I've seen a lot of people rocking, you know, going retro in so respect. Are you just rocking what you have, or is that by design because you want to look cool?
Probably a little bit of both. If I'm being, oh, hold on. Sorry, dude. My friends are blowing me up. I don't want this to mess up our show. Here we go. Probably a little bit of both. I have worn mossy oak of some pattern since I started turkey hunting, and it has gone back and forth between, you know, the old and the new. It is like, this is the full foliage that they just re-released this year. I mean, I think that originally it came out in 1991 or something like that. But I do like the old patterns. So, everyone likes to look good in the woods though, Mitch. Right?
When you look at old patterns though, you know, whether it's Mossy Oak, whether it's Realtree, you know, both of those companies stand out to me when you think about the big boom in the 90s when TV was popular, and those two were making really good camo patterns. You look at their camo patterns then, and you look at we have now, and I personally don't believe there's that like in, you know, 30 years or whatever, I don't believe that we've gone leaps and bounds in camouflage as far as patterns. Those patterns that we had in the 90s were awesome.
Yeah. Very, very effective. Still effective to the day, you know, to today. I've seen, for me, I'm fortunate I get to hunt all over, you know, all over this country for turkeys. There are definitely different patterns that work better in other parts of the country. Sure. I mean, you get out to Texas where, you know, it's just not as green as like Pennsylvania or Ohio where I'm from. It's just different. If I'm wearing this full foliage, I stand out like a giant green blob almost. I think that a lot of the interesting part about like the love of, you know, the old school Mossy Oak and Realtree, I think it's a lot of the stuff. Got like, I'm 42, right? Like if you grew up turkey hunting, this is what your dad or grandpa was wearing, you know, when you were a little kid. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of that that plays into the popularity of it. It's pulling at the heartstrings, those nostalgic heartstrings. So
nothing wrong with that. One question I had for you, I had to ask this. Yeah. So you've been turkey hunting a very long time, love turkey hunting. Did you figure out how to use a mouth call yet?
Dude, I just, this year, the first turkey I ever yelped up and killed with a mouth call happened in Alabama. I have been practicing. You know, I'm, you and I are similar. Like we drive a lot for work, right? I get a lot of windshield time. So I have been yelping on a mouth call nonstop. And so I figured out, and this is obviously a podcast, but if you're watching it, or maybe this is a clip, dude, I have to cut all of the tape off of off of the mouth call. I cut it all off down to the frame. I will not be entering any calling competitions anytime soon, Mitch. But it is effective enough to kill a turkey. So there we go, man. Finally, still, I had a couple just recently, the last couple of years, I've had a couple turkeys that I needed to call at, like soft calling, but I couldn't use, you know, I couldn't use a pot, you know, I couldn't use, you know, any of the other calls, right? Just because of the movement. Mm-hmm. And so I told myself one day, I'm like, all right, it's time to put your big boy pants on and finally get past this. So it has been a process, man, almost a 20-year process to learn to use one of these stupid things.
And you know what I find interesting is there's a lot of people who are really, really good on a mouth call. I've improved over time, and the ease of a mouth call, just because they're small and they're easy and compact, I've noticed a lot of people like to just solely rely on mouth calls. And I've even heard people say, well, why would I carry anything else other than a mouth call? That sounds the most realistic. And I'm like, to you, but does it to the turkeys? Because I have seen time and time again where birds would not respond to one call, and you switch to another, and you can switch to that old glass call, that old box call, and man, it completely changes the game. So I still think it's important to have an arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you look at it's some of the really, really good turkey hunters. And I'll use this guy as an example, Dave Owens, just because he's very, very popular. And he's really good at killing turkeys. If he is searching for a turkey, he's using a tube call. He's using a trumpet. I've never seen him run a box, but there's just a certain tone and pitch that a box call or a glass call can hit, that like a mouth call just you can't do it. Yeah. Right. So I think it's, if it works for you, I have learned that there's so many different ways to turkey hunt and kill a turkey. And there's a lot of really good ways to do it, and everybody does it differently. But if I need to locate a turkey on a windy day, I'm using a box call, and I'm getting it's that extra step, that extra octave or whatever the term is that you just can't get with a mouth helper. So,
well, you brought up a good point there, and you started to touch on something that I had planned to ask you on this episode. So, mm-hmm. with you, with your career and with what you do in podcasting world, you've had the opportunity to meet and talk and interview, in my opinion, a lot of legends when it comes to hunting and turkey hunting and a whole different array of perspective. And I was wondering, when you think about some of those people you've talked with in interviews, and you said about how many good turkey hunters, what are things that stand out to you from the conversations you've had with some of these old turkey hunters that are maybe parallel? Things about the way they approach the woods, the way they approach turkey hunting, that you just like, man, they all have this one or two things in common that make them successful.
Yeah. I think that, and I've been fortunate to talk with a lot of these guys and hunt with a couple really, really good turkey hunters. And the one thing that I will tell you that I think is universal is those guys, like the really good turkey hunters, there are a couple of things. One, they're not super loud when they call, which is really interesting to me, because a lot of us think we just need to be like just as loud as you can be in the woods. They're very quiet, and they have such a good understanding of like where they need to be in relation to where the turkeys want to be, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
And how they move through the woods. Those turkey killers, like the really good ones, they do not move fast through the woods until they need to, right? They're very, like, I've got to hunt with Mike Pentecost at Woodhaven. I mean, just one of the best turkey hunters ever, right? And that dude just moves slow through the woods and methodical, and just, looks at the terrain and absorbs everything around him. And when it's time to move, he's gone. He's just like gone, But I think in terms of like actually killing turkeys, that woodsmanship that everyone talks about, you look at what you have to work with, you think, okay, if I'm a turkey, this is where I want to be. Where do I need to be? How do I insert myself into this turkey's life? And those guys have such a good understanding of that. And that just comes with time, right? That comes with experience. There's no video or magazine or podcast that you can listen to. I made a comment the other day. When I first started turkey hunting, I didn't have a mentor, right? YouTube wasn't really a thing. There was TV shows, but the TV shows weren't teaching, right? They were just entertaining. And so my teacher was the woods, the wild turkey, and failure. That's how I learned to hunt turkeys. And I think that all of the really good turkey hunters went through the same thing. But man, it's just methodical movements through the woods. It was a learning lesson. Really, when I started to get to hunt with some of these guys and just see how they move and operate, it's very interesting.
This is just my personal opinion, and I'll let you kind of expand on however you think this. But I think there's a big disconnect in hunting turkeys versus hunting other big game species, and for the sole fact that you interact with turkeys more than most other species we hunt. Like, you can call to deer, like you can rattle and grunt and snort wheeze and have interaction in that case, and I've done that, but it's way different with turkeys. And you know, you think about the way you hunt deer, I think about the way I hunt bear, a lot of other big game species, you're doing exactly what those good turkey hunters are doing. They're looking at sign, they're reading the terrain, they're hunting it smart. They're not just going into the middle of everything and blowing it up, and looking for their a deer or whatever. And you think about turkeys, like, it is so easy, especially when you have a certain timeline in which you can hunt. Like, if you can't hunt all season, you only hunt Saturdays or a couple mornings here and there, like, you want to find that goblin turkey. And it causes people to walk very fast. I think it's easy when I think about the ridges in Pennsylvania. I think it's very easy to just walk the edge of a ridge and just call your way along it. And when in all reality, when you're at the edge of that ridge, you're exposing yourself when you're calling, and you're probably moving too fast. You're just looking for a gobbling turkey, and sometimes it works. You can stumble on turkeys and kill them. I've done it that way. But I'm learning myself, too, that almost treat my spring turkey hunting in a sense like the way I want a deer hunt. You know, slow, methodical, look at the lay of the land. How would I walk into this? Like, if there was turkeys in the middle of this where I think they're going to be, even though they're not answering me, how would I try to get in here and hunt them so I don't bust them out of here?
Yeah. Mitch, it sounds like you're becoming a turkey hunter, man. I like that.
You know, it's funny.
It's
funny, Paul. I've turkey hunted my whole life. Since I'm a kid, I mean, turkey hunting, I thought when I was a kid, was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I went through a phase because of the property that I hunted and the people I hunted with where I killed turkeys very quickly when I was young with a shotgun. And I've always been a bow hunter, and I wanted to kill one with a bow. So I hunted for almost 10 years sitting in box blinds and sitting in pop-up blinds, hunting with the bow. And it was also during the time where the places I was hunting, the turkey population was really, really going, it was not in a good place. We weren't seeing birds. We weren't hearing birds like we did in the past. And turkey hunting got boring because I was sitting in a place with a bow because it's harder to run and gun with them. There wasn't as many turkeys to go. And I just got to a point where I'm like, man, this is boring. I could be doing something to get ready for deer season. So I kind of slacked off with turkey hunting. And in the past 5 years, as turkeys are getting better in the places that I hunt, and I just decided turkeys are meant to be killed with a shotgun, and I started running and gunning with them, man, I'm having a lot more fun with it every year. And I think every single year, it's like getting under my skin more and more, and I'm enjoying it more and more and more.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. You know, I like I said earlier, there's a thousand ways to kill a turkey, right? Deer hunting a turkey is by far my least favorite way to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Sitting in one stationary spot with a bow or even a shotgun and a blind, whatever. People do that all the time. That's, you know, I don't judge people for the way that they hunt turkeys. I like to do it, with, you know, without a decoy, just move around and intelligent use of the situations as they arise and just go out and find turkeys and meet them on their level. And that's my favorite way to do it. It's very difficult to do that, especially in the big woods, like in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, you have a lot of hills, you got a lot of terrain, you got a lot of trees, you know, you got a lot of elevation change. But when that happens, right? When you make that decision to say, okay, I'm going to hunt turkeys, I'm gonna hunt them down. I'm gonna find them. I'm gonna, you know, that's fun, man. I think that's the funnest way to hunt it. What you're doing, I think it's the funnest way to hunt them. And when I hear people say, dude, turkey hunting is boring, well, I ask them, well, how do you hunt them? Well, I hunt them, you know, out of a ground blind or whatever it is, and they just sit over a food plot. I'm like, dude, that's like, that will get boring. That'll get boring to anybody, right?
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost Spring and Summer Planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
Dreaming of owning a hunting property, small farm, or remote homestead? Or maybe it's time to sell and move on to your next adventure. Whatever your dream is, Steve Choco and Base Camp Country Real Estate can make it happen. Base Camp Country Real Estate land professional Steve Choco is dedicated to providing unparalleled service in the land real estate market with national advertising power that turns for sale into sold fast. Visit us online at chocoforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510. Again, 814-360-4510.
But I think when you get out there and you interact with them, you interact with the environment, you see new ground that you might not have seen before, man, that's so much fun, man. And to me, that's really like the essence of turkey hunting. That's the heart and soul of it. And it's not for everybody. And I get that, but man, it is fun. I'm glad the last couple of years you're starting to get that in your blood, man.
I'm definitely getting it back. Now, here's one thing that I will say, like anybody that listens to this, like what Paul just said about running and gunning them and finding turkeys and hunting turkeys on their level. I agree. That is the most fun way for me personally to go hunt turkeys. But there is one thing I would say to anybody who's like, yeah, I want to do that. I don't want to sit in a blind. I don't want to just say stationary on turkeys. The one thing I will say in favor of doing that, and I didn't realize this until now, is when you hunt turkeys that way and you force yourself to sit in a place where they're going to frequent at some point and you can't just rage with calls, you got to be patient, soft calling, and wait birds out. I personally believe I learned patience for turkey hunting. Like, because you know how many times you'll be sitting, you'll be moving on a gobbler and you think, I'm going to set up here. And he might come a little bit closer, but he just doesn't break that maybe 80-yard barrier. He's down over the ridge, or he's just out the bench around a bend, and he just won't break a little bit. Years ago, I was so apt to try to make a move when they were close like that or something, and I'd ruin it. And I have learned that, I believe this, that all those years that I was trying to kill one with a bow, and I was just sitting stationary, I think I learned a lot about turkey behavior just sitting and observing from a distance, and it taught me to be patient, and I think that helps me in this. So all I'm getting at is, while sitting in a blind and hunting that way might not be the most fun way, it comes back to when you're diverse in how you approach things. Like if you hunt the same property for deer hunting, you hunt the same deer stand, and you're successful, and you think, man, I'm the best deer hunter in the world, until you go out and you broaden your horizons and do something different, you realize that you're not as well-rounded as you could be. And I think it's the same thing with turkey. Like hunting them with different weapons, different properties, different ways of approaching it, from sitting to moving to whatever, I personally think it makes you a more well-rounded hunter.
Absolutely. And that patience that you talk about, you know, you can gather that gain that experience, you know, several different ways. Early in my turkey hunting career, I learned patience the hard way by being impatient. Mm. And I would say, all right, I gotta go get this turkey. And I would move 30 yards and I'd see him run off, you know, and then you just kind of replay it. And it's just like, well, if I'd have just sat there for another 30 minutes, what would happen? You know, and then so you just start trying new things. And that patience is hard earned. However you do it, if it's sitting in a blind or if it's bumping turkeys, that sucks. Like there's no easy way to learn patience, right? And then, you know, I think for me, learning those patience as I experience more and more turkey hunts, I still scare turkeys. I bump turkeys every year, right? Mm-hmm. I blow a hunt every year. That's just how it is, man. And it still sucks, but that, you know, it's, you learn when to be patient, and then you really learn when not to be patient, right? When you make that move. So that's experience. Once again, hard earned. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So another question, when it comes to all the wonderful turkey hunters and turkey biologists and all the people that you've interviewed, what is something that you've learned that stands out, like a fact or something about turkeys or turkey hunting that most people don't know and you could share with us?
So really, really good question. Michael Chamberlain, Dr. Mike Chamberlain, Wild Turkey Doc on Instagram, you can find him. He is a professor of ecology at the University of Georgia. His main focus is obviously wild turkey research. And 7 or 8 years ago, I'm not sure the time frame for this study, there is a unhunted, I think it's a military base in South Carolina, right? So it's just like, don't quote me on this, 200, 300,000 acres, fenced in, massive piece of property, full of wild turkeys, full of deer, quail, all of the species, right? So a lot of wildlife research goes on at this facility. And so Chamberlain did a study at this place. And so they always, he will compare the research from hunted populations on public property to this non-hunted population, right? And so this is, there are two things that I want to tell you. So they did like a gobbling study on public property and then a gobbling study on this unpressured population of turkeys, right? And so the gobbling, starts in the beginning of breeding season, goes up, and just keeps rising on this non-hunted property. And then like sometime at the end of the season, like the end of spring, it just drops off and just turkeys aren't naturally as prone to gobble. That same time frame in the same state on public property, you see that big uptick of gobbling for the breeding site. As soon as the turkey hunting season starts, it just falls off the face of the cliff.
Yeah.
It's just gone. Gone. Like the gobbling is reduced by like just a huge percentage, right? And it's us. It's the hunting pressure applied to those turkeys. All of a sudden there's people out hooting and yelping and crow calling that weren't there. And so like as turkey hunters, we're like, well, there's no turkeys here. But if you were in the same spot 5 weeks ago, you'd hear 300 turkeys gobbling. I think that like that when you see that with scientific data backed up, you know, it really like makes you understand like how impactful our presence is on turkeys.
And I'm going to stop you for just a second because I got something to draw from that big time.
Yeah.
And it goes back to talking about sitting and being patient. There is a property that I've hunted for since I'm 12 years old, not as much for turkeys, but I've hunted it my entire life and there's turkeys there. And this year there's birds there, but every year the pressure is insane because it's an easy access place. It's got great habitat. There's birds there, but there's always pressure. There's always guys gravel popping, owl hooting, calling from the road, guys running and gunning, chasing turkeys. And I have learned in that, and I believe this, and I just talked about this with my buddy on the phone the other day. I said, I believe in some of these areas that we know hold turkeys, and it has just that setting of where turkeys be. If you just sit and be patient and use soft calling on public land, you might not get a bird. You might get a bird that fires up and is gobbling his full head off and comes right in and you kill him textbook, but it's public land. It goes back to exactly what you just said there. You can kill a turkey if you sit and be patient and they'll come sneaking in. How bad do you want it is kind of the deal. But anyway, continue.
So the next point from this research is like just solidifies what you just said. So public land, I can't remember what state, Chamberlain had gone out and had tagged a bunch of turkeys with GPS trackers to where they could like live monitor these turkeys for like a short amount of time, right? Chamberlain would stand at like parking spots in Georgia or wherever I don't remember where it was. So he would stand in this parking spot on this WMA. Turkey hunters would come in. Chamberlain would say, hey, I'm doing the study. I've got a gobbling turkey. He would give them the location of these turkeys, right? Like a general area. He would give the hunter a GPS monitor. This guy, and Chairman would be like, there's a turkey roosted, you know, 600 yards this way in a tree on a ridge. He just wanted to see the interaction, right? And then the hunter would come out of the woods at the end of the hunt, and then Chamberlain would interview them about their experience, right? Did you hear any gobbling? Did you see turkeys? Did you hear any hen yelping? Jake, whatever it was, like, you know, what were your interactions with wild turkeys? And the guy, you know, multiple guys would come in and say, yeah, I heard gobbling, called, interact a little bit, never saw the turkey, never killed the turkey. And then Chamberlain would have the GPS data. And at times, this turkey would be 30 yards from the hunter, and they never saw him or heard him, which is insane. And then the guy would get up, and the turkey's gone, right? And so, you know, Chamberlain could see the interaction, right? And then the guys would leave. And then we all hear this turkey hunter, and then the turkey would come back 2 hours later to the same general area that they had heard this hunter calling from earlier. But the guy was left 2 hours ago because he didn't hear any gobbling. And if he had just stayed there, you know, this, and so that's the maddening part about turkey hunting, because we get in our own head. We're like, all right, there's no turkey. I heard this turkey gobbling. He's gone. I need to go find him. 2 hours later, he's back in the same area gobbling looking for me.
Yep.
Because the hens that he was with earlier in the day, you know, and that's why one of the, you know, I'm sitting here, you ask me like, why are you on this turkey hunt? Why are you doing it? You know, dude, I didn't hear anything gobbling this morning. I'm going to let them get through their morning routine, man. I'm going to let them get through their routine. I'm not going to booger them up. And then, you know, I'm going to go in at 9 o'clock and see if I can find someone that wants to play the game.
Yeah, can we talk about that a little bit? Because that,
yeah,
I'm to the point where hunting on the roost, while that's the best time that I can hunt based on my time available, I don't know that that's my favorite time to be hunting turkeys. I'm not as successful on the roost. What about you, Paul? Like, what's been your experiences this season and past season when it comes to roost hunting versus, you know, mid-morning hunts and stuff like that?
That's a great question. I brought this up with Doc Weddle, which, for those of you that don't know Doc Weddle, there's what's called a U.S. Super Slam, right? That's killing a turkey in all 49 states with a turkey. He's done it 5 times. This guy doesn't have a YouTube channel. He's written some books. He doesn't do just like one of the best turkey hunters to ever walk the face of the planet, right? And he hunts March, April, May. Every day that there's a turkey season, this man is somewhere in the woods. I brought up to him about, I am way more successful after the roost time. That's just how it's been for me in my entire career. And I brought that up with him, and he's like, Paul, I don't even know what you're saying to me, man. He's like, that is crazy talk. And so I think every turkey hunter has their method, right? A guy like Doc Weddle will hear a turkey gobbling on the roost and will get as tight to that turkey as he can and shoot him when the sun's so low. You know, a guy like me, I like to hear them kind of move through, follow them close. And then when they disengage from their morning routine, that's the time that I like to be turkey hunting. I have killed way more turkeys after 10 o'clock than I have off of the roost. I mean, it's like 90-10, right? And that's just my method. So I think everyone develops their method and their routine. I've gotten to the point, Mitch, where if I've got stuff for the kids or family, or I'm just tired, like I like hunting that second shift, man. I like hunting. If you can hunt all day, I like that 10 to 2 shift. You know, that's the time that I like to be in the woods. Obviously I love being, you know, watching the sunrise, hearing them gobble on the roost, but I am way more deadly just as a turkey hunter on that second shift than I am. And maybe it's a sign of, maybe these guys that do it longer, you know, maybe you figure it out, but that's just my method, man. So
I think
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, there's not. And I definitely think there's, like we've said multiple times now, there's more than one way to skin the cat in this game.
Yeah.
I know people who get very successful. Like I've had a very select number of successful roost hunts, and every single time that I've had one, what stands out to me, and it wasn't because I knew this, it was just happenstance, I just ended up being at the better spot where I thought the birds would end up flying down. And there's many times that I've hunted public land, big tracks in Pennsylvania, and you find a gobbling turkey and he's on the roost and you look at the terrain, you think, where's he going to fly down? And you pick your best bet and he goes the opposite direction. Yep. And one thing I'm coming to the conclusion, and I don't do this a lot, and I'm getting better. I'm doing it more this year than I ever have in my entire life. And that's just going out preseason and listening where they're roosting, listening where they fly down, and getting an idea of what are they doing on a little bit more regular basis, because I think that makes your setup that much easier. If you know where they're roosting and you know how to get it, and that, now we're getting into a subject of woodsmanship. If you know your terrain well enough that you know how to access it to get closer to a roosting turkey, if you know where he's at and you've taken what he's done in the past few weeks and then you try to relate that into what he's done, what he might do this morning, I think it increases your chance. The one thing that I can't seem to figure out, and I don't know that anybody will, but I'd love to talk to people, and maybe you have thoughts on this too, is I lean towards softer calling, less aggressive, and I think that's why I've talked about those mid-morning hunts being more successful for myself as well. But is there something in calling technique on the roost that really stands out in increasing your success rate off of the roost? And I don't know that there is, because some people will say they're great roost hunters, and they'll have the exact same experience as I have. So I don't know what the disconnect is for me and why I'm not as successful there.
So I think is an agronomist, I'm sure that you've used this term. People will ask you, you know, about biology or weather, and the answer is often, well, it depends.
Yeah.
Right. And as turkey hunters or deer hunters, we hate that when sciencey people say, well, it depends. It's like, because it doesn't. We could say all of these things, you know, call soft, never call, you know, to a turkey. Some guys, like, will refuse to call to turkeys on the limb, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, that's the craziest thing. And then there are days that if you've got a turkey, Mitch, that wakes up with a bad attitude and a death wish, it doesn't matter what you do, how loud you call, or he's going to gobble at it and he's going to fly down because he's ready to die. You know? Yeah. So I think, you know, the calling on the limb, is definitely, It's a tricky game, and there are I think it's tricky for a few reasons, because if you're not using a decoy, you're alerting that turkey to where you're at. And sometimes that's a good thing, right? But dude, I have had turkeys like hop, like fly tree to tree, right, in the morning. Well, I've got hens around me, and I've seen gobblers like fly on the roost,
bouncing limb to limb.
Yeah, bouncing limb to limb, just trying to find these turkeys, these hens. And so I think if you are calling to a turkey on the limb, you better be prepared. Like, your setup better be really good, right? Like, you better be able to hide really good. I will do it. If I'm in the woods and I've got turkeys calling, like gobbling on the limb, and I'm in a good spot, but maybe I'm like kind of, let's just say I'm 150, 200 yards away, whatever it is. Dude, I will absolutely call to those turkeys. Can you hear this?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So that is like, and I'm not selling this. This is the Woodhaven cluck and purr.
Mm-hmm.
And you see how used that is? Dude, this is the call that I use the absolute, like, this is the call I use the most, dude. In the woods. But so tree yelping is like a very nasally sound of a turkey, mm-hmm. right? So if you've got a turkey that's gobbling and maybe you're out of position, or you've got a hen decoy out, and dude, yelp to them. It's soft, right? And so tree yelping, I'm trying to do this. It's kind of a weird position, but can you hear that?
Oh yeah.
It's very, and if you're ever on a turkey, if you ever hear a hen tree yelping, It's a very unique sound. It's not something that they do on the limb or off the, on the ground. You know, it's its own unique call, right? And I will absolutely call to a turkey on the limb, if they're gobbling. You know, there are times like here's a good scenario of it depends, right? The turkey in Alabama that I killed, I watched him, right? I heard him fly up to the roost in the evening. He started gobbling. I got as close as I could without any risk of spooking the turkey. And I watched him on the limb at night gobbling, right? I knew exactly where he was going to be. He was off of a little ridge. I'm on a clear cut. I've got one tree to work with. I sit on that tree thinking that he's going to pitch off but I don't have a decoy, right? And I know that I cannot call to this turkey because all he has to do is turn around and look and there's no, like, I'm done, mm-hmm. right? He's not going to come in. Dude, the moment his feet hit the ground when he flew off, I used that mouth call and I called to him. I mean, like the moment he hit the ground, pop, 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 right? And that's all it took. So I think if you're hunting the roost and it's calling to him, man, you gotta feel it. Yeah. If you got a bunch of hens that are yakking and yelping, you know, and tree calling, you're probably not going to be the one that calls them in.
Right.
But it doesn't hurt, right? But if you've got a lone gobbler or one or two of them and you don't hear any hens, man, I don't think there's anything wrong, with calling on a just soft calling on the limb.
One of the calling scenarios,
feel it out, you know?
One of the calling scenarios I've really been practicing a lot is that morning hen roost to fly down. And you
fly down, cackle.
Exactly. Yeah. And you've heard turkeys do that where they're in the tree and they got that nasally yelp and they're doing a couple note yelps. And then it seems like sometimes when they're doing longer note yelps, it might go from 4 or 5 tree yelps to 9, 10, 11 tree yelps.
And they increase it for sure.
They increase it, and then sometimes they start increasing their volume, and it just keeps yelping, and then they'll go into the and do that cackle. Yeah. And my best roost hunt I ever had, I stumbled into turkeys close on the roost late in the season, so there was a lot of foliage, and I got closer, and I didn't even know they were roosted there. It just was like the perfect storm situation. And I did that scenario, and that bird literally, I heard him fly out of the tree after I did the fly down cackle. Like, I did the fly down cackle, yeah. And that just flipped. And it was a calling scenario that, like, once I experienced that, you just want to replicate it all the time, right? You just want to use that because you think it's going to work all the time. But I've been trying to figure out and use that calling scenario and make it as realistic as I possibly can, because I do think it's deadly. But you brought up a good point when you were talking about sitting at the tree and seeing that bird on the limb and waiting until he flew down because he could turn and look. I think that's a good thing to keep in mind based on the season. Like, we're gonna open here this week, and there's not a lot of leaves on the trees. It's open. And you get close to a turkey on the roost, and you're calling to him on the roost, and he doesn't see anything. I mean, I think that's a great point.
And once again, if they got a death wish, they might come in. But if they can see you, if you're exposed, and they don't see a hen, it's just like there's a really good chance he's not going to come over there. Like, they can feel, they can sense that something's off. It's like when you're hunting that hill country that you guys hunt, and they just pop their head up over the little ridge, and they're just, you know, they're looking, and they don't see a hen where you're sitting in that bush or up against that big oak tree, and they just turn around and leave. You know, they're like, there's a ghost. Yeah. they know something is amiss, right? So, you know, once again, it depends on the situation that you find yourself in and the temperament of that turkey. If I'm out hooting and, you know, it's gobbling time, and I'm like, man, I just feel like there should be a turkey there, I will call soft, you know, always start soft. That's just like one thing that I've learned. Start soft, work your way up. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to be, but you know, once again, I've heard some turkey hunters, you know, one guy I heard him say, he's like, I want to be the loudest thing in the woods. And this guy kills turkeys every year, you know? So it's just, and that's once again, that's the maddening thing about turkey hunting. So.
Yeah, there isn't a rhyme or reason sometimes. I know people like that they just run and gun, and like everything we're talking about, right? Like, you've had experienced turkey hunters teach you things. You've learned things the hard way, and you've kind of come to this realism that, you know, we've got some similarities in trying to slow down, be methodical if we can, call soft. And there's people that'll disagree with that, and they're successful. And I think that at the end of the day, what it comes down to, and I think this comes into anything in life, especially in all forms of hunting, is How much time do you put in and how bad do you want it?
Absolutely. Yep.
That's yeah. a big one.
Yeah. Without a doubt, man. You know, if it takes, and I've talked about this I did that How to Hunt Turkeys podcast on the Sportsman's Empire Network years ago. I did an episode called Burn the Boats. And if you want to learn how to turkey hunt, Jace Greer is doing a really good job with that podcast. So listen to this podcast with Mitch and then pop over and listen to Jace. He's got some really good information, but, it takes a level of commitment to be a really good hunter, whether it's deer, turkey, rabbits, ducks, doesn't matter, right? I think especially with turkeys, if you're hunting them like we do, especially in Pennsylvania, if you're hunting big tracts of public land, it takes a level of uncomfortable commitment to be a good turkey hunter. And that's just, you can't get away from it, right? And I call that burning the boats, man. If you want to be a good turkey hunter, you got to burn the boats. You got to do all of the things that it takes to be a good turkey hunter. And you've got to be willing to deal with pretty consistent failure. So that's just part of it, man. And some people love it. Some people hate it. But the commitment it takes to be a turkey hunter, it is worth it at the end of the day. And I think you're starting to experience some of that where it's just an evolution, right? So
absolutely.
And then when we can't walk anymore, Mitch, you know, when we're in our 70s, cause our knees are blown out from turkey hunting like idiots for 35 years, I'm going to sit in a ground blind over a food plot and just smoke turkeys.
There you go.
And, you know, drive up in my electric golf cart right to the blind.
So. Hey, you earned your time at that point is the way I look at it. So what do you got left for the rest of the season, Paul? What's on your agenda?
Man, so I've got, I still have to kill my Ohio turkey, but I've got a Michigan. I do have an invite for Pennsylvania, with a guy up there. I think I'm going to try to hunt PA. I've got a tag in New York, Massachusetts, and Vermont. So I'll finish my, that third week of May, I'll be doing a New England swing.
Wow.
So, yeah. And if I get real aggressive, I might try to zip on down to Tennessee and do some turkey hunting down there. So,
but that's an action packed month.
It is, man. It stresses my wife out. It stresses my bank account out. It stresses my workout, but I love it. So,
always flirting with the edge. That's what you got to do when you're a married man and everything else, flirting with the edge.
Yeah, that's it, man. I told my wife I wouldn't hunt this Saturday. I've been grinding it out. I mean, my first turkey hunt was April 6th, and I haven't stopped since, man. I've been somewhere turkey hunting. So I'm like, all right, let's hang out Saturday morning with the kids, you know, and her. And then I look at the weather on Sunday, and it's going to be like a low of 35 in the morning and a high of 63 and sunny with no wind. I'm like, dude, that's turkey hunt weather. I'm not going to be home on Sunday. I love you. So.
Well, Paul, I appreciate you coming on the show and chatting with us.
It's my pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Best of luck the rest of this season.
Yeah. Thank you, my friend.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.